Picture this, if you will. You're a pediatrician making rounds in the newborn nursery, and you walk into the room to evaluate a healthy baby girl weighing 7 pounds, 3 ounces. She had an uncomplicated delivery with Apgar scores of 9 and 9. During your physical exam, however, you hear a normally split S2 in inspiration, but you also hear that same S2 split in expiration. As you listen for the subtle fixed split heart sound, you consider its implications. And welcome to Audio Bricks. I'm Arjun Iyer, bringing topics in cardiology from our bricks to your ears. After completing this section, you'll be able to 1. Define atrial septal defect. 2. List the types of ASD and explain the mechanism underlying each type. 3. Describe the clinical presentation and diagnostic test results for an infant with ASD, the effect of an ASD on the second heart sound, and the source of the murmur associated with an ASD. And 4. Explain the treatment options for a child with ASD and the risks and complications associated with an untreated ASD. So, an atrial septal defect, or ASD, is basically a hole in the wall, or septum, that separates the left atrium from the right atrium. Easy, right? Now, you might know more about this, but it develops in about 1 in every 1,500 births, making it pretty common. There's several different types of ASD, with clinical consequences depending on the size of the defect. Part 1. Pathogenesis and classification. The majority of atrial septal defects arise from the atrial septum, unsurprisingly. At around the third week of embryonic development, the heart exists as a simple tube, with only a single atrium and a single ventricle, which, through some magic of twisting and folding, reach their approximately correct anatomic position during the fourth week. At this point, the division of the atrium occurs in two steps. First, the thin septum primum divides the right atrium from the left atrium. But it doesn't close completely and leaves a hole between the atria called the ostium primum. Next, the ostium primum closes, but because fetal blood needs to flow from the right atrium to the left atrium, another forms immediately cephalad to it, meaning closer to the head. Now, this is called the ostium secundum, which is a super confusing name for it, since the ostium secundum is actually a hole in the septum primum. Seriously, it's like the people who named these things had no consideration for the generations of med students who were going to mess this up. Finally, the muscular septum secundum grows immediately to the right of the septum primum. That also has a hole in it, referred to as the foramen ovale. Compared to the ostium secundum, which, remember, refers to the hole in the septum primum, the foramen ovale is caudal. And this hole is referred to as the foramen ovale while it's open. And when the two septa eventually fuse together, it's called the fossa ovalis. So to recap, for most of fetal life, you have two adjacent atrial septa. The muscular septum secundum with the caudal foramen ovale, and a thin floppy septum primum with a hole in the cephalad portion called the ostium secundum. Since the fetal lungs are non-functional with minimal blood flow, this arrangement allows the high-pressure, high-oxygen placental blood to enter the right atrium, then bypass the lungs by crossing the atrial septum and going directly to the left atrium and eventually the systemic circulation. But importantly, the holes in the septum primum and secundum are not supposed to overlap. When the two septa are pressed and eventually fused together, blood should not be able to flow from one atrium to the other. It's a weird setup, but I promise I'll go over why it develops like that in the next section. The point is, an atrial septal defect occurs when the holes do overlap, creating a region where blood can flow from one atrium into the other. Ostium primum defects are less common, and they make up about 15-20% of ASDs. These defects are generally located near the dorsal and caudal portions of the atrial septum. Ostium secundum defects are much more common and make up about 70% of ASDs. And these can be caused either by problems in the size and positioning of the ostium secundum or by failure of the septum secundum to grow normally cephalad. These are generally located near where the foramen ovale would normally be. Now, there's a bunch of other ways that an ASD can occur, like in the sinus venosus and the coronary sinus, but these two are the most common ones by far. Sinus venosus defects are where one of the vena cavae entered the right atrium in a way that sort of straddles the atrial septum and provides blood to both atria. And coronary sinus defects are caused by abnormalities in the tissue that separate the coronary sinus from the left atrium. Together, they make up less than 10% of all ASDs. Now, it's important to note that another very common cardiac defect, the patent foramen ovale, involves a lot of the same structures, but is not considered a true ASD. Because no atrial septal tissue is actually missing. Now, there's a whole section on PFOs that explains them much better, but for now, let's check in to see what you learned. What are the two most common types of ASD? The most common is the ostium secundum defect, followed by the ostium primum defect. Part 2. Pathophysiology. So, here's a question for all you physiology studs. Why is having a hole between your atria a problem? The thing is, fluids flow naturally from high to low pressure regions. When you're an infant, blood's supposed to flow from the right atrium to the left atrium to allow oxygenated blood to largely bypass the lungs. As soon as your lungs start working at birth, though, the entire pulmonary circulation vasodilates, and the pressure in the right heart drops like a rock, meaning that the left atrium now has higher pressure than the right atrium. Now, normally, this pushes the thin, floppy septum primum right up against the muscular septum secundum, and since the holes in the septa don't overlap, blood can't flow from left to right. Eventually, the septa fuse together. But ASDs allow blood to flow freely from the left atrium to the right atrium, even after birth. Now, that's interesting if you're an embryology nerd like me. But what are the actual consequences of some of your left atrial blood leaking into your right atrium? What this means is that blood that was already oxygenated by the lungs ends up mixing with the deoxygenated blood in the right atrium and re-entering the pulmonary circulation. Although the blood that ultimately leaves the left ventricle in a heart with an ASD is every bit as oxygenated as in a normal heart, an ASD makes the heart much less efficient by causing a fraction of the cardiac output to repeat its transit through the pulmonary circulation unnecessarily. Now that's the short-term consequence, but you also have to remember that with an ASD, more blood enters the right side of the heart and the pulmonary circulation, which, by the way, are not nearly as strong as the left heart and the systemic vasculature. And to adapt to the increasing blood volumes, the right atrium and ventricle will dilate, while the walls of the right ventricle and the walls of the pulmonary vasculature will hypertrophy to accommodate the larger volumes of blood. Now, here's a pop quiz for you. In what direction does blood flow across an ASD after birth? Blood flows from the left atrium to the right atrium. For future reference, this is referred to as a left-to-right shunt. Part 3. What does a patient with an ASD look like? The presentation of an ASD depends primarily on the size of the defect and the degree of shunting. Most ASDs are small, and patients generally remain asymptomatic due to the limited shunting of blood. In contrast, infants with larger defects can present with significant symptoms of congestive heart failure, such as tachypnea, failure to thrive, and frequent lower respiratory tract infections. Atrial arrhythmias like atrial fibrillation or atrial flutter may also be present in patients with an ASD, which isn't too surprising. I mean, when you stretch any of the chambers of the heart, you stretch out the conducting pathways and can cause arrhythmias. So tell me, what are the classic heart sounds that you usually hear with ASDs? Classically, you'll hear a wide, fixed split of the S2 heart sound, and sometimes even a systolic flow murmur across the pulmonic valve. Now, what do I mean by a fixed split of the S2 heart sound? If you remember, the S2 heart sound is caused by closure of the aortic and pulmonic valves. Normally, during expiration, the aortic and pulmonic valves close at the same time, but during inspiration, the closure of the pulmonic valve is audibly delayed, and S2 actually sounds audibly delayed, kind of like this. This phenomenon of S2 splitting only during inspiration is called a physiologic split, but with a big enough atrial septal defect, the S2 splitting pattern is widened and fixed because the defect allows the pressures in the right atria and left atria to equalize during both inspiration and expiration. Pulmonic flow murmurs, much like aortic flow murmurs, are systolic murmurs that kind of sound like this. And these are caused by high rates of blood flow past the valve from the increased volume of blood flowing through the right heart. As you might imagine, you have to have a really big ASD in order for the right heart blood volume to be fast enough to cause a murmur, so don't count on being able to hear this one all the time. You might also feel a prominent systolic impulse along the left lower sternal border from the right ventricular hypertrophy and remodeling that can happen with an ASD. But again, this finding implies a pretty severe ASD. All right, guys, it's time for a memory check. What are the symptoms associated with atrial septal defects? ASDs are commonly asymptomatic if they're small, But large defects present with symptoms of congestive heart failure in infants, including tachypnea, failure to thrive, and recurrent lower respiratory tract infections. Part 4. How do we diagnose an ASD? Diagnosis of an ASD is often first suspected from the signs, symptoms, and physical exam findings, but confirmed on echocardiography with Doppler. Echocardiography can not only detect shunting of blood through the defect, but also assess the disease severity. Although diagnosis is made definitively with echocardiography, other diagnostic modalities can also lead you to suspect an ASD. You might see an enlarged cardiac silhouette on chest X-ray, or increased inferior and V1 voltages with a right ventricular strain pattern on EKG. Now, these studies are often used to work patients up for other causes of shortness of breath or atrial arrhythmias, so while the chest X-ray and EKG changes aren't reliable, they can provide clues that you should order the more definitive echocardiogram. One weird and very invasive test that often shows up on tests is how atrial septal defects show up on right heart catheterization. Basically, you thread a catheter from the internal jugular vein into the various chambers of the right heart, and you can measure pressures or take blood samples to measure the partial pressure of oxygen. Right heart catheterization in ASD would show near normal values in the superior vena cava, but an elevation in the pressure and oxygen content in the right atrium, right ventricle, and pulmonary artery. And why is that? Because oxygenated blood is shunted across the ASD from the left atrium into the right atrium. Part 5. Treatment. For small ASDs, corrective intervention may be unnecessary, as spontaneous closure often occurs in young patients. In fact, for patients with ASDs less than 8 millimeters in diameter, about 80% of these defects will spontaneously close by 15 months. However, the likelihood of spontaneous closure decreases dramatically as a patient ages. Even then, small ASDs that persist into childhood can be left untreated if there is insignificant shunting of blood across the defect. If you have a larger defect, or even a smaller defect with a high flow rate, then the ASD should be treated, even in the absence of symptoms. Interventions for repair include surgery or percutaneous catheter-based closure. And actually, percutaneous repair is now generally the procedure of choice because it's less invasive. It does, however, require specialist expertise to perform. Part 6. Complications of untreated ASD. Some ASDs that are asymptomatic at birth can be well tolerated for years. However, later in childhood or as adults, these patients can present with progressively worsening symptoms of congestive heart failure, like exercise intolerance, dyspnea, and fatigue. Fortunately, closure of the ASD should be able to treat these symptoms. But over time, the chronic overload to the right heart can cause irreversible right ventricular hypertrophy. Even worse, the increased pressures in the pulmonary circulation that lead to pulmonary hypertension can also lead to hypertrophy of the vascular smooth muscle and even diffuse pulmonary stenosis, which puts even more stress on the right ventricle. Now, this vicious cycle usually has an insidious onset. It starts off as a small ASD that doesn't cause problems until at some point between adolescence and early adulthood, where the pressures in the right heart grow so high that they actually exceed the left heart pressures. So, if the pressure in the right atrium exceeds the pressure in the left atrium, in which direction does the blood flow? At this point, the shunt reverses, and blood flows from right to left, bypassing the lungs in a phenomenon known as Eisenmenger syndrome. And that is a truly bad news bears situation. Because now, you have deoxygenated blood from the right heart going straight into the systemic circulation, so you can get symptoms like cyanosis, dyspnea, and clubbing. Eisenmenger syndrome is also associated with much more rapid decompensation, and therefore needs to be treated as a medical emergency. Now, the worst part about Eisenmenger syndrome is that if your right ventricle and pulmonary arterial circulation have remodeled enough to generate the kind of pressures that actually reverse flow, then there's no way you can fix things just by plugging up the hole in the septum. I mean, your right heart and pulmonary vasculature are basically completely irreversibly screwed. Basically, the only thing that'll completely fix the problem is a total heart and lung transplant, an extremely invasive surgery that has a high fail rate. As a result, most of these patients just get aggressive medical therapy for the rest of their very short lives. And on that depressing note, let's test your knowledge one last time. What symptoms are associated with Eisenmenger syndrome? Cyanosis, dyspnea, and clubbing. So let's see if we've completed our goals for this lesson. First, can you define atrial septal defect? An atrial septal defect is a congenital cardiac defect that allows the shunting of blood between the left and right atrium. Second, can you list the types of ASD and explain the mechanism underlying each type? ASDs usually arise from abnormal development of the atrial septum, most commonly defects of the ostium secundum, but also defects of the ostium primum. You can also develop atrial septal defects from abnormal development of the surrounding tissues, like the sinus venosus and coronary sinus defects, but these are less common. Third, can you describe the clinical presentation, physical exam findings, and diagnostic tests for an infant with ASD? Small ASDs are generally asymptomatic, but larger ASDs can present with heart failure in infants or easy fatigability and exertional dyspnea in adults. The classic physical exam finding associated with an ASD is a wide, fixed splitting of the S2 heart sound, and less commonly, you might hear a systolic murmur from flow across the pulmonary valve. But the definitive diagnosis of ASD is made by echocardiography with Doppler. Next, can you explain the treatment options for a child with ASD? While small ASDs may close spontaneously, especially in infancy, large ones and ones with high rates of shunting need to be addressed by surgical or percutaneous intervention. Finally, can you explain the risks and complications associated with an untreated ASD? Consequences of an untreated ASD include late onset of congestive heart failure and Eisenmenger syndrome, a medical emergency where the left-to-right shunt changes direction and forms a right-to-left shunt. If you were able to answer those, then you, my friend, you know your ASDs. Armed with your newfound knowledge, let's revisit our case from earlier. An otherwise healthy infant is born with a fixed split S2 heart sound on physical examination. How do you confirm your suspected diagnosis? And if confirmed, what do you tell the patient's mother about her child's prognosis? You order an echocardiogram, which confirms the diagnosis of an atrial septal defect. You tell the patient's mother, however, that ASDs are relatively common, and most cases spontaneously close by the age of 15 months. Sure enough, by her 16-week follow-up appointment, the patient's ASD has in fact closed, and her mother is immensely relieved when you tell her that she won't be requiring surgery after all. And that's our show! Make sure to check out the audio brick on the related patent foramen ovale. But remember, a PFO does not count as an ASD. Happy studying, friends!